You're listening to Mornings with the Mayor on Talk 1260 KTRC.
Good morning and welcome to Talk 1260 AM KTRC. My name is Carla Lopez. I'm from the Public Information Office at the City, and I'm sitting in for the Mayor today on Mornings with the Mayor. This morning we have a show that's all about one of the amendments that's on the ballot on the upcoming election. It is a constitutional amendment number 5, which proposes an amendment to Article 6 of the Constitution of New Mexico to make the Public Defender Department its own department. Right now, it's under the governor's office, and that raises some questions and some challenges for public defenders. So my guests today are Sheila Lewis, who has spent her life doing public defender work, including at the Public Defender Department here in Santa Fe, and she retired from there, and now she is the executive director of the New Mexico Women's Justice Project. Good morning, Sheila.
Good morning, Carla. Thanks for having me.
Sure. And also, I'm always pleased, or completely pleased, to have my husband on this morning. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Carla.
My husband is Michael Vigil, who's just recently retired from the district court bench here in Santa Fe, where he was oversaw the criminal court docket for 18 years. So let's start with Sheila before we get into the meat of the amendment. Tell us about the New Mexico Women's Justice Project.
Thanks for asking. We're a very small not-for-profit, and we're not a service agency.
No.
What we are is an advocacy agency, and our goal is to help young women and girls, women of all ages really, who may become enmeshed in the criminal justice system or already are enmeshed in that system, to have improved rules, laws, and policies in place for them. So we advocate for them on commissions, committees, at the legislature, with the public, with community groups. We try to put people together to say women are important in this system. They make a very big part now of the criminal justice system, and they need to be protected as well.
Sure. So I understood you to say that it's people who are already, women who are already in trouble, as well as women who are not in trouble.
Right. And also women when they get out of prison. One of our biggest concerns is the effect of coming out of prison with a prison record. That's what we're working on now, and it's a big issue for us.
Sure. And that's true not just for women. I mean, they can't get jobs. Tell
that's,
us what the problems
are. Well, the
are.
Big problem is it's hard for people to believe this, but even if you're not convicted of a crime, you have a criminal record that can't be sealed. And now in the age of the Internet, every landlord, employer, school can find out that you have been arrested for a crime, and they're entitled to deny you a service based on that arrest. There's no law that prevents it. So we're working on it, trying to get that passed in the legislature, an expungement bill. So far, we're only going for expungement of innocent people,
okay,
people who are not convicted of crimes. We'll work on the later expungements at another time.
Yeah, but and really, I mean, once again, the issue for, you know, we want people who come out of prison to be productive, and it's very hard for them to be productive.
Absolutely. And people ask me, well, why is that a women's issue? And it's because women are the heads of households. They need to have a place to live that's safe when they come out with their children, and they need jobs. And to be denied a job because you've been arrested is outrageous. It's difficult enough when you've been convicted, but to be arrested and not even convicted of a crime, to be innocent and then not be able to find a job or housing, it's outrageous. Mm-hmm. We have to put an end to it.
Absolutely. Well, good for you. How long has the project been around?
The Women's Justice Project has started in 2001. We're an offshoot of PB&J, Peanut Butter and Jelly in Albuquerque, great organization that provides services to women, families, and children, fathers too now, to help them become better parents. And so we're their advocacy.
Great. And you're on the web, I imagine?
We are, www.nmwjp.org.
nmwjp.org. Okay, great.
Check us out.
Good. So let's talk about Constitutional Amendment number 5. You spent your life as a public defender. Now you're retired. Why is this important for public defenders, for it to be its own department? Well, start with what is the proposed law say?
The proposed law is pretty basic, really. What it says is there shall be a commission that will be the sort of the board of directors for the Public Defender Department. It will be run by the chief public defender, as it always has been, but instead of being reporting to the governor, as it's been traditionally, they will be reporting to this board of directors, this commission. And that's all it says in this constitutional amendment. Let's get them out. Let's get this agency out from under the governor's office.
Why is it a problem that it's under the governor's office?
Well, there's a lot of reasons, and it doesn't have to do with any particular governor.
Mm-hmm.
It's just simply the governor is the executive, and the Public Defender Department is representing people who are the most unpopular people in the country, people who are accused of and probably guilty in many cases of some very heinous crimes. And it's very hard for an elected official to support the agency that's going to be sitting next to the notorious sex offender or the notorious murderer. They have to be tough on crime. That's their role in the system. We have to be there to protect the people who are both innocent and guilty. And so there's an inherent conflict there. And what I like to tell people is, it's as if there was a divorce proceeding, and a husband and wife. And the wife's mother said, I'll pay for the legal costs for both sides. Mm. You get a funny feeling when you hear that. That doesn't seem right. You know, she has a dog on that fight. So we want to get that out from under the governor's office and just make it an independent entity.
Great. And so, Michael, do you want to talk some about the right to, what does the Constitution say about people who are charged with crimes?
Well, in this country, citizens have the right to counsel, and it's probably the most important right that an individual has to be able to adequately be represented in our criminal justice system. And over the years, there's been a real problem with the way the Public Defender's Department has been organized under the governor's office. And I agree with Sheila, it really doesn't matter what governor. This isn't particular to the present governor. I think this has been true for all of the governors that I remember, is that the Public Defender's Office is not an office that the governor with enthusiasm goes out and tries to get them adequately funded. In fact, the opposite is true. Over the 18 years that I was on the district court bench, there were times when the resources and positions that were afforded to the public defender were so critical that the failure to provide them adequate funding was really rendering the right to counsel meaningless. The public defender was able to, with the resources that they did have, do the best job that they could, but they were not allowed to lobby and go into the legislature and try to advocate for more monies, more positions, and more resources. So it's critical that this amendment pass, because I think it takes it out from the governor. It puts it in a standalone position, which allows them to advocate on their own for the resources that are necessary to give that right to counsel meaning.
Great. And Sheila, there's also precedent for this around the country.
Yeah, this is the wave of the future and the present. We already have about 42 states that have some form of commission.
42 states out of 50.
Yes, so we're behind the curve here.
Okay.
We need to get on board, because that's the only way that has traditional, it, you know, since Gideon v. Since Gideon.
The Gideon case?
Yes, the Gideon case, which gave people the right to counsel. There have been different models. And New Mexico has a very good model, as a matter of fact. We have a statewide public defender system, which is the best form you can have. I'm very proud of that. Because in some states, it's done county by county. So when you have a poor county, you have really no resources dedicated to it. And also, there's small counties that they're not interested in representing their criminals.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very proud of the way our system is set up, and I'm very proud of the work we do there. But with limited resources, it's just not enough.
Sure. So is there a particular model from another state that we like of a commission?
There are models all over the country, and mm-hmm. they're all different, and they've evolved in the best way they can, right for their location. And that's why this commission is not being decided how it will operate, how many members. That's not on the ballot. That's going to come later on.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have a bill introduced. It's going to be worked out just the way all bills are worked out. The sides are going to hammer out the details. They're going to bring it to the governor. And ultimately, there'll be a bill that the governor will sign identifying who's on the commission, what role the commission plays. But right now, we're just creating the commission.
And you have a lot of support, it seems like, for this.
We do. We have support from practically every branch of the government, from judges all over the state. They are particularly strong advocates. We have ex-prosecutors. We have law enforcement. I have not identified a group that's really opposed to it in any active way. But the important thing about it is it's at the bottom of the ballot, and we want to make sure that people get to it. So we tell them, start at the bottom, vote up. Start yes on five at the bottom. That's the most important thing.
Yes on five at the bottom. Okay. So, Sheila, I know we're running out of time for this segment, but do you have any stories from your time as a public defender where you just felt hamstrung?
I do have some stories, and I'm afraid it took me a few minutes to explain them to you.
Okay.
But the short version is I did criticize somebody in the executive in a brief that I wrote, and I was called on the carpet for it.
Oh, okay.
So it has happened.
It has happened. So there, the potential for conflict is...
It's real.
It's real, and you saw it happen, yeah. Tell us the website, because you have a website that has lots and lots of information on this, and it's called
BalanceTheScalesNewMexico.org. And it's a group of people that got together and said, this is an important issue for us, and we want to make sure that the public understands it. That's the most important thing, because these constitutional amendments are difficult to read and understand. So
sure.
Our goal is to make sure that we have enough opportunity to tell people what's going on.
And that, and again, it's the last one on the ballot, and there's other amendments and other things on there, right?
Most of them have to do with the Public Regulation Commission, so it might be even more confusing, public defender, public regulation.
So that's okay. Last on the ballot, and BalanceTheScalesNM.org is the website. We're going to take a break, but we'll be back on Mornings with the Mayor. We are back on Mornings with the Mayor on Talk 1260 KTRC AM. I'm Carla Lopez, and we are talking this morning about Constitutional Amendment Number 5 on the ballot in the upcoming election. And Sheila Lewis, you were going to tell us some war stories from in the courtroom about when this, that it hurt to not be an in, not be able to advocate for your own department.
Right. The example that it's my own personal example, which
sure.
is the best I can speak to. As an appellate attorney, I was asked by the court to file a friend of the court brief. Sometimes a brief that just tells the court, tell me the lay of the land. Don't advocate for one side or the other. Tell me. And the question was, is the sex offender registration law constitutional? And I tried to point out how the problems with it. And our governor at that time had made a statement that if anyone's even accused of a sex offense, they're fired. And I said, that's the kind of passion people bring to that issue, understandably, but that's not how the law works. The governor was misspoke when he said that. And I did get called on the carpet for...
For talking about the lay of the land.
Yes.
Great. Yeah. And so, Michael, in your courtroom?
You know, at the end of my term here of 18 years, we tried to calculate, just in my division alone, how many criminal cases I had handled over 18 years. And we said it was over, we were able to calculate over 10,000 cases, just in one division. And I think what the public needs to know and understand is that 90% of those cases are handled by the public defender.
90%.
Yes, and that's just felonies. In one division here in Santa Fe. The public defender is also charged with representing people in magistrate court who request counsel. So they represent everyone from a petty misdemeanor shoplifting all the way up to first-degree murder. And in handling such an enormous caseload, the public defender very seldom is allowed to ask for new positions. So the caseloads have just grown and grown and grown. And I'm sure they violate all of the standards for the number of cases that a criminal lawyer should be handling. But they have no choice.
They have to take.
They have to take. And I think what this amendment would do is recognize those burdens on the department and allow the public defender, the chief public defender, and the commission to try to remedy that situation and make sure that it doesn't get to the critical stage where you have to maybe not give as much time to that residential burglary because you've got a first-degree murder case. Everyone should be entitled to effective assistance of counsel, and you can't do that if you're completely overloaded.
90% of the cases in your court alone were public defender cases. And Sheila, how do you qualify for public defender?
Well, there's two ways to get a public defender. One, you have to be indigent. You file your $10 filing, your application fee, and then they interview you and ask you a number of questions about your financial status. And so you get your public defender. But something that people don't really understand is we don't only represent indigent people. There are people who are working people who simply cannot afford a lawyer. You know, people live paycheck to paycheck. So what they do is they sign a contract with the public defender department, and they pay us a certain amount, very, very slow rate. Of course, the whole thing is kind of a...
So like $20 a month? Or,
something
I mean,
like
really?
That. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I have to say, many of our clients end up in prison, so they do not become collectible debts. It's kind of a silly process, really. But it's the only way that people in the middle can get their day in court and get a lawyer. And I think that that's so crucial for people to understand. We're not just talking about poor people, which are the bulk of the load. We're also talking about hardworking people, the people listening to this show who are saying, what would I do if I needed a lawyer, if I got accused of a crime?
Mm-hmm. A DWI.
A DWI, for sure.
Yeah. You're a working person, you get a DWI, it could be devastating.
Absolutely.
Well, not that you should get a DWI ever, but...
No, but the main thing, the most important thing about it is, you know, we have graduated sanctions for DWI. So if you have a lawyer that just says, oh, don't worry, it's just your first, people may enter a guilty plea when they're not guilty. They just want to go home, they want to get it done, and they say it's not going to matter. But it could happen that they get arrested again, and maybe that time they are guilty. And now they're in a lot more trouble because they didn't take that first case seriously. And their public defender, unfortunately, could not take that first case as seriously. Just was impossible with the caseload.
Oh, huge challenges. If this amendment passes, there'll be more that the public defender can do besides advocate for their own budget. What else? Lobby for their own budget. What?
I think one of the most important roles of the public defender at the legislature is to give a balanced view of new laws. When a new penalty gets created, it sounds good on paper, but then sometimes you just need to hear what the reality of that's going to be. The cost to the public defender department, and just whether it's going to make a difference. There has to be two sides heard, and right now the legislature hears from law enforcement, hears from the prosecutors, but it does not hear from the defense bar for one very good reason. The public defenders cannot go to the legislature because they're under the governor's domain. Well, people say, well, why don't private attorneys go up there? I don't know if you've ever been up to the legislature, but you can spend a lot of time up there and never get to say a word or speak to anyone. It's a long day at the legislature. And when a private attorney takes off a day of work and sits around and does really nothing, they get discouraged. But the prosecutors, they're on the clock. They're getting paid whether they have their moment to speak or not.
The prosecutors, law enforcement.
Absolutely. Yeah. Everybody else is there getting paid. It's not their favorite thing to sit around and do nothing, but they're not losing a day of work, and it makes it very difficult for our private attorneys to make their voice heard.
Well, and different for private attorneys because they can turn down cases.
Absolutely.
They don't have to take everything that walks in. If you can't pay them, go to the public defender.
That's right. And also public defenders
are not so immediate.
Are both on staff at the public defender department, and then we have over 100 contract attorneys, and they're in those remote areas of the state where we couldn't afford to have an office, and they're very isolated, and they're really working for a very, very unconscionably low rate, and they need to have their voice heard as well.
And when you say unconscionably low, it's like they could do a murder case for $5,000 or something. I mean, really low.
I wish it was $5,000.
It's not that much.
It's not that much. And other cases are really low. The main problem is that it's a flat fee. So instead of being paid to do more work they do, the less they make. That's the wrong incentive. But that's one of the changes that really has to be made in the system. Pay for the work that's being done so that work can be done. They're good lawyers. They just can't afford to not earn a living while they're representing indigent people.
And a flat fee? So they sign a contract with the public defender and we send your case, you get $300 or something, right?
That's correct.
Okay. And so when this amendment passes, let's hope, that you'll be able to lobby for that change, is what you're saying.
What I'm saying is the commission can say, this is time to start making that change. How are we going to make the transition from flat fee to pay for service? Mm-hmm. That's the kind of thing a commission can do.
Great. So, again, the public defender will actually have a voice.
Right.
Very good. Okay, I think we're about ready to take another break. Again, this is Mornings with the Mayor, Talk 1260 AM KTRC, and I'm Carla Lopez sitting in for the mayor today. Stay tuned. We're back on Mornings with the Mayor on Talk 1260 KTRC AM. We are talking about Constitutional Amendment Number 5 on the upcoming ballot, and I'm visiting with Sheila Lewis and Michael Vigil. Sheila, if this amendment passes, when this amendment passes, let's hope, what other positive changes will that mean for the Public Defender Department or for the Defense Bar in general?
It will give the public defender the opportunity to look at things systemically. What can we do for a long-term change? And I want to give a really concrete example. For the people in Albuquerque, they've had this experience. Metro Court in Albuquerque is the biggest, most bustling court in the state. And when somebody is represented by a public defender, instead of having a public defender assigned to represent that person all the way through their case, they get a new attorney at every stage.
Oh, no.
So there is no relationship between the attorney and the client. It's very efficient. It pushes
for the court.
For the court. It's a good for the court, but it's not good for either the clients or for the lawyers, because we have our newest lawyers usually assigned to Metro Court, and they pick up skills that they will hopefully never have to use again. Going into court completely unprepared, completely unconnected to your client, without any differentiation between one client and another. And that is a huge nightmare for the people in the system. And that really sets a bad tone for people about the whole criminal justice system. If you've ever been in that courthouse, you come away feeling like, I did not get my day in court. I met my lawyer 1 minute before we walked in, and the first words out of that lawyer's mouth was, I think you're going to have to enter a plea. They want to do a good job. They try to do a good job. But that factory mentality down there pushes against it all the time. It's time for us to go to the right kind of representation. It's going to be a big change. Organizing the whole office differently. And you need somebody at the helm to say, let's undertake that project now. The commission could do that.
So that brings us to, you know, I mean, these people, they're charged with crimes. Why should they have a... You know, where did that right for effective assistance of counsel come from?
You know, I have to tell you, I'm also was on the board at the SALAS, the Rape Crisis Treatment Center here, while I was a public defender, and they said, how can you be on both sides? And the answer is, it's very easy. I have children, and I don't want them hurt. I don't want them sexually abused, like any other parent. But on the other hand, I also know that I don't want my son accused of a crime he did not do. People don't like to think about that possibility for their family. They only think, I have to be safe from crime. Sometimes you have to be safe from the criminal justice system. And it's very important to have somebody whose job it is, notwithstanding the facts of the case, to say, I'm fighting this case hard and fairly. Because once we slip up on that, our whole system falls apart. We have to have zealous advocates. And, you know, before I was talking about Gideon versus Wainwright, that's the case. And that was around the 40th anniversary of the case. And it's a really important case because Mr. Gideon was in prison trying to get his day in court, and he didn't have the right to an attorney. And he wrote...
40 years ago.
50 years ago. And he wrote a petition by hand, little tiny block letters, saying, it's not fair for me to not have an attorney. And it went all the way up to the Supreme Court, took years and years and years, and finally the Supreme Court said, it's true. Every indigent person must have an attorney for free if they can't afford one. And so that's when all the public defender departments around the country changed from the system of judges simply looking in the audience to see a lawyer and saying, I'm assigning you that case. You're going to represent that man for free.
Really?
And not be, that's how
that
it was done.
Happened.
Or not at all. Uh-huh. Just you stand up there and represent yourself. To a system that actually functions. So as systems go, 50 years is not that long. You know, we've had police departments a lot longer than 50 years. This is the newest branch of the criminal justice system, and we're finding our way over the years. So that's how we got to the point of creating this system here in New Mexico, our statewide system. And it's evolving. It should always be evolving.
Mm-hmm. So 50 years ago, Gideon got himself a lawyer.
That's right.
And every other poor person did, too.
It's pretty amazing. There's some great stories about it. I hope everybody reads up on Mr. Gideon, because it's a terrific story about one man making a big change in the system. It's inspirational.
From prison.
Yes.
He was already in prison. That's great. So these are all good and inspiring stories, but it'll cost the taxpayers money to do this commission and make this an independent department?
Even if it did cost money, it would be worth it. But in fact, the amount of money is negligible. We're talking about commissioners who are not paid. They're not on salary.
Mm-hmm.
They are simply paid their per diem to come up for a meeting. And I'm on, New Mexico Women's Justice Project is on lots of commissions and task forces. And most of us don't even ask for our per diem. But even if they did, it's minimal.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about meetings during the year, but mostly we have technology now. We Skype, we talk on the telephone, we use the internet.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to travel as much as we used to in our great big state where the cost of everything is enhanced by the cost of gasoline, really.
Right.
We don't have that problem anymore. So there was a time when the legislature looked at this and estimated it would cost something like $24,000 a year.
Which is, in the whole scheme of things,
small.
Yeah.
And probably even less than that now.
Mm-hmm. Because it really is just per diem. Well, there'll be staff. That would be they would appoint the chief public defender. Is that what is the proposal?
Well.
Or we don't know that
we
yet.
We don't know that yet.
Yeah.
And that's the most important thing for people to understand is we don't want to get lost in the weeds of how is this going to operate? What exactly is it going to do? Because those are difficult questions that will be handled in a deliberative manner.
Mm-hmm.
That's not something you can put on a constitutional amendment. People don't understand and don't want to know the nitty-gritty of how this is going to work. They need to understand that they're enabling it and that it may take a year or two before we get the commission designed the way it will work fairly and efficiently,
sure.
But it will.
Okay. So, again, the amendment basically says people will vote, yes, we want the public defender to be independent. Or
that's exactly right.
That's exactly right. Okay.
That's what they're going to be voting on.
Great. Can you, either of you, think of any cases where, in fact, a horrible crime was committed and the wrong person was charged? And effective assistance of counsel got that person needed to?
It's interesting that you ask that because most of my career I was an appellate attorney.
Okay.
And what that means is I review the cases to see, did that person get a fair trial?
Mm-hmm.
Of course, first you have to get a trial. And that's such a small, small percentage of cases. Almost all cases are plea bargained out. And we don't know how many people plea bargain when they're innocent. Studies have shown a great many people do for very good reasons. They're told if you run the risk of going to trial, you run the risk of a huge sentence. And they know they're going to get a public defender who may or may not be in their corner for them. So that we have a lot of people who do plead guilty to crimes they did not commit.
Really?
But we also have people who go to trial and I'm telling you, ineffective assistance of counsel, it goes from the smallest ineffectiveness to things that are just startling. And so there's a standard for what is an effective attorney. Outrageously, the courts say an effective attorney is an attorney who does something.
Something, really? That's it?
We call that the fogged mirror test. If you put a mirror under this attorney's nose, would it fog?
Wow.
That's how bad it is. They simply have to do something.
They have to be breathing.
So they can miss all of the issues, not talk to any witnesses, not talk to their client. fall asleep. There are many cases where, of attorneys who have fallen asleep around the country, and the courts have held, well, you haven't shown how it really harmed the defendant, that the attorney slept through the trial. And so ineffective assistance comes is raised frequently as a claim, because it is a claim.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't just say, well, my attorney wasn't effective. You have to show what would have been different if your attorney had been effective. It's not just a get-out-of-jail-free card. Would it have made a difference? Which is a very high standard. How do you show that if my lawyer had talked to witnesses, I would not have been found guilty? That's tough. So we don't ever want to get to that point. We want to have effective assistance before it goes up on appeal. We want our lawyers trained. We want them, most importantly, to have caseloads that are realistic.
Sure, that makes sense. Michael, I hope you'll be willing to talk about the Scott Owens case. He had a good lawyer.
He did.
And he was hung out to dry before ever going to trial, but effective assistance of counsel pointed out what really happened. Is that
correct?
That's
right. He had a very good lawyer, and the case went to trial, and the jury came back with the verdict that they did. But, you know, we've had public defenders represent people in vehicular homicides that were quite competent and also got the same result. One of the things that a trial judge has to be concerned with as you're presiding over your cases is one of the things that Sheila talked about is that the court should not, and some courts do, but the court should not just sit back and allow ineffective assistance to occur. And I tried to do that over the years, and what it ended up doing at times is it really ended up causing real problems with moving the cases orderly through the docket, because I was granting continuances when I knew counsel was not ready because of the number of cases they had. I had to continue the case, and the case went on for a year and a half, which is really
a burden
not
on
acceptable.
Everyone.
You know, the old justice delayed is justice denied, and that goes both for the victims in those cases as well as the defendant. Their cases should have been properly through the courts in a timely manner, and they were not, because I had to grant continuances to the defense because they were not prepared, because they didn't have the resources.
Very good. We're going to take a break right now, but we'll be back to finish up talking about Amendment 5, excuse me. We'll be back. We are back on Mornings with the Mayor on Talk 1260 KTRC, talking about, and I keep getting it wrong, Amendment 5 on the upcoming ballot. Michael, clearly you pointed out how it's complicated. You know, the judges have to watch out to make sure that the lawyers are doing their job, and if the lawyers don't do their job, the law isn't real strong for doing anything about that. So hopefully judges will do their jobs also. Also, both of you alluded to public defenders have way too many cases, but they're doing an amazing job.
They are doing an amazing job. I mean, one thing you have to remember is they have expertise in their areas. Mm-hmm. The other thing is that it used to be that the public defender office was just a training ground, and you had a few years there, and then you went out into private practice. And that's not the case anymore.
Really?
People love that job. People love being public defenders. You know, I wouldn't have stayed 25 years if I didn't love being a public defender in New Mexico. And I had 7 different chief public defenders over the course of my 25 years, so things went up and down over those years. But I'm very proud of the work I did. I'm very proud of the work that my division did, which is the appellate division. But I'm really proud of the work that the people out in the smaller offices did with no resources, and the people in Albuquerque with the overwhelming caseloads they had there. They are brilliant in figuring out, how am I going to make this work? And I'll tell you one thing that I found very interesting over the years. Some private attorneys, some of the very best private attorneys, always use the public defender department to get information and to learn new skills. believe it or not.
How do they use the public defender department?
The appellate division had a policy that if a lawyer had a legal question and an emergency, they could call us up, and we were at our desks, and we were sort of dial an answer. And I won't name names, but some of the best lawyers in the state who were paid quite a bit of money for their cases would come into court and go, oh, my God, I missed something. I'm on the line right now, and Judge Vigil's not going to give me another continuance. What am I going to do? And that would call up the public defender appellate division, and they would get there instantly. Mm-hmm. We also, public defender department provides training to our own attorneys and to the contract attorneys all over the state. We have a terrific training director and a great training department, and they're working hard to make sure that everybody understands the law. But things happen like a case came down that said criminal defense attorneys have to understand the consequences of a criminal conviction if you are here on your immigration status, whether you're here legally or illegally, but you're here on an immigration status.
Yeah, that's a huge issue for immigrants.
It's a huge issue because the smallest mistake in criminal court can result in a family being torn apart and deported. So we were told, you have to understand immigration law now, too. Well, that's an area of law that is overwhelming, and our lawyers have made huge strides in trying to understand what does it mean when my client has an immigration consequence. And let's remember, not everybody looks like an immigrant. You have to start out with, where were you born? Under what circumstances are you in this country? And the important thing is you have to train lawyers to do that. That's not a natural question to ask. So we've made huge improvements in the level of practice here by teaching it over and over again. Check that out. Don't miss that possible consequence, because that conditional discharge in criminal court can mean deportation.
Because it's seen as a conviction by the immigration authorities?
The federal law defines a conviction very differently, and in some cases you don't even need a conviction to form the basis of a deportation. So
a conditional discharge is you do a bunch of things that the court requires and then your charges go away. Isn't that what that is?
Well, it seems like it would go away, but for example, we have something called the habitual offender law. And the habitual offender law says if you have a prior conviction, one prior conviction, we must add 1 year to your sentence on your new case. If you have two, we must add four. And if you have three or more, we must add eight to each count of your conviction. So a very small third crime, for example, somebody who has bad checks. Mm-hmm. And I've had this case. A young man got 19 years on passing bad checks that totaled less than $500 because he had some prior convictions. So you say it's very important to make sure you don't have a conviction. Well, cases with conditional discharges can count.
Mm-hmm.
They do not go away. They do not disappear into the let's just make it go away land.
Mm-hmm.
They're very important in case of future criminal justice
whatever. Let's hope they don't get in trouble, but if they do.
Sure.
So, Michael, over 18 years, the quality of public defenders? That's mostly who you saw in your courtroom.
Yes. They were quite talented, the attorneys that appear. And some are still practicing there. They're very conscientious. They're hardworking and they're smart. Unfortunately, not all of them were able to stay the full 25 years like Sheila did. And some actually, because of the caseload, because of the grind, left the public defender's office because they needed a break. They needed to leave. And I hated to see those lawyers leave because they were good lawyers, talented lawyers. The other area that, and Sheila just sort of talked about it, and she was part of this group, the appellate division of the public defender's office, is an incredibly talented group of lawyers. And they handle, again, 90% of the criminal appeals. And they have, their advocacy for their clients have resulted in some outstanding cases coming down from the appellate courts that have been extremely helpful to everybody in administering the criminal law. So they are talented at all levels.
At all levels, yeah. So overall, they do a great job.
Yes.
With really limited resources and no voice. Seems wrong for lawyers not to have a voice.
Right. You know, we do self-select. We're the talkers. And we like to be heard. And so it's very, very frustrating for us to feel like we can't be heard in the legislature when other people can. And I want to point out one thing. Public defenders do take off time from work. They take a vacation day sometimes to go up there and try and be a citizen and express their opinion. And it's great to be a citizen, but it's much more powerful when you can say, I'm speaking for a large organization, and on behalf of them, this is what I want to say. And so they need that opportunity.
Thank you. Okay, so it's Constitutional Amendment Number 5.
Start at the bottom.
Start at the bottom of the ballot. It's the very last item on the ballot. You're advocating vote yes, clearly, from this show.
And we're hoping that everyone who hears this show will talk about this with their friends and neighbors. It's not the juiciest topic in the world, but it's an important one. And because someday they may need a public defender, and they're going to want one who has the resources to do the job that needs to be done.
You have to remember to turn the ballot over. It's a two-page ballot, and the end of the ballot is on the back page. Please don't forget to vote on the back page.
Right. And you can vote early now.
Yes.
I know. Call the county clerk's office. Check out, if you want detailed information about this constitutional amendment, go to balancethescalesnm.org and vote yes, I think, Constitutional Amendment Number 5. We are about out of time, but thank you for being here today. And this is about it for Mornings with the Mayor on 1260 KTRC AM.
Baby, if I could.